Good morning. This is Dawn Ely, and you're listening to Corporate Conversations radio show on the Atlanta Business Radio X. And we're here with our producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Dawn. How are you enjoying? Does it feel like fall today? You're all dressed in fall colors?
I know. It is. I have to say I'm kind of over my triathlon season for the summer, so I'm looking forward to a little fall.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to run in this weather, I'm sure.
Yeah, if I didn't have a stress fracture in my foot, it'd be a lot easier.
You can hop.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're working on that one. But it's a beautiful morning here in Atlanta, and we have four exciting guests on a very timely topic. We're going to talk about the new healthcare legislation, and specifically we're going to take off on a previous show where we had talked a little bit about wellness programs. We're going to dive deep into wellness programs in the context of this new legislation and the small to mid-sized business. So this should be a really good informative show that's timely for a lot of small and mid-sized companies who don't really know what to do with this. So, Lee, I'm excited about this show. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Great topic, timely.
Yeah, well, why don't you let us know who our sponsor is today?
Sure. Today's show is brought to us by Palladium Chief Legal Officers, who offer highly experienced divisional and general counsels as your in-house CLO at budgetable flat-rate fees on a part-time or interim basis. Your company gains the assistance of a dedicated CLO without the costs of having an expensive full-time executive legal employee.
All right. Well, you know, this new Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010, also known as the Healthcare Reform Act or just the healthcare legislation, seems like it has a lot of aspects to it that can affect a small to mid-sized company. They have a large component of wellness program incentives in the legislation, but yet there's also a lot of cost shifting and increasing in cost that it could impact the small to mid-sized company. You know, there's dependent coverage now up to age 26, which adds more people to the health employer's plan. There's coverage of pre-existing conditions that now could add more expense to the employer's system. And we're bringing, you know, the statistics say 40 to 50 million uninsured persons onto coverage plans, many of which will be supported by the employers, including the fact that the employers, if they have, believe, a certain minimum, I think it's 50, but we'll find out from our experts here, of employees, they have to provide some kind of health care coverage. So it sounds like the small businesses could get really crunched here, and the legislation defines a small business as 100 or fewer employees. But yet it does seem like there are some advantages to the small and mid-sized businesses with some of these wellness program incentives. And, you know, the statistics show that the wellness programs can be very, very effective. And we heard from one of our guests a couple of shows ago how it can be even effective for the small to mid-sized company of 150 employees or less. You know, they say that 80% of illnesses and diseases in the U.S. are preventable. And that means that a wellness program can, in fact, be effective when you're dealing with lifestyle choices. According to Wellness Councils of America, more than 81% of businesses with only 50 or more employees have some form of health promotion program right now. So I'd like to turn to our expert, first expert, Lisa Owen. You know, as many companies, the medical costs can consume half of their corporate profits. So the employers are really looking for some help here. So I'd like to introduce our first guest, Lisa Owen. Lisa is the founding partner of Core Benefit Solutions. She has over 15 years of experience in employee benefits brokerage and consultation for both corporations and individuals. She started her career with Northwestern Mutual in Tallahassee, Florida, and moved to Atlanta in 95, where she gained experience with a general agency. She became a partner in 2003 and promoted to Vice President of Sales and Marketing in 2005, and her business knowledge and industry expert, compared with her innovative ideas and commitment to client satisfaction, have earned her notable credibility in the insurance industry. Lisa, good morning and welcome to our show.
Good morning.
So tell us, you know, a little bit about this legislation, and should the small to mid-sized company be fearing this legislation and it impacting them?
fearing is definitely a strong word. You know, I think that, as we know, I'd like to tell all my clients, don't panic yet. If many of us remember the lovely acronym HIPAA.
Oh, yes.
You know, it took, we're still receiving guidelines related to HIPAA and COBRA. So we're looking at this legislation evolving over the course of 7 to 10 years when we really look at it. But there are certain facets of the law that are being implemented currently. As you mentioned in the beginning of the show, the dependents to age 26, the pre-existing conditions for children under the age of 19, etc. So some of these laws are going into effect immediately, but the majority of the laws that we're seeing that we think will affect employers are effective in 2014, but there will be phase-in laws over the course of the 2011, 12, and 13 prior to that. But specifically the one that you're referring to, the requirements to offer benefits do apply to companies 50 or more employees, and that will be effective in 2014. But related to how this may, you know, small to mid-sized employers and large employers, and how this may affect them and how should they be fearful of the law, there are some positive facets of the law, and there are some negative, of course. So I think we're going to get into some of those in the later in the show as well.
Yeah, well, why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about, let's start with the good news.
Okay.
What are some of the good aspects of this legislation that can, in fact, really help an employer, especially of the small to mid-size?
Great. Well, let's specifically talk about wellness. I'll touch on that, and then I'll kind of get into some of the other pieces. There are wellness grants for companies under 100 employees that should apply next year. We have not received a lot of information on those wellness grants, so at this point we're not exactly sure how you would apply for those grants and how you would actually qualify for those grants. And unfortunately, I did read recently that there's questionable funds within those grants. So I am here to say that I'd say a possible wellness grant at this point because we have not received a lot of information on it. But it does let you know that it is in the forefront of legislators' minds of how important this is. And I read some staggering statistics over the weekend in USA Today, which is that, you know, if you look at, we all know the United States is known to have the largest obesity problem in our country at 37% of women being obese and 32% of men. And then when you compare that to Japan, which has the lowest, it was 3%.
Hmm.
So when you hear those kind of statistics, it lets you know where we are. And so I say this outside of just this legislation, I truly believe in wellness and the health culture of a company and how that can benefit both the employer and employees in various ways. But specifically related to this legislation too, in 2014, there are requirements for new federal studies on wellness cost savings and the effectiveness of those wellness programs. So there will be studies that will be implemented in 2014.
Is the jury still out on that? Like, we need more studies, do you think?
You know, when you look at how you implement, we call it the carrot or the stick approach when you look at wellness programs. When you look at just setting up walking programs, Weight Watchers, et cetera, we call that kind of the carrot approach, which is, you know, these are great in programs, great incentives, information that's available to the employees, education, but really where we see true return on investment in healthcare dollars is more of a stick approach, which some people don't like to use that terminology, but is really to affect the pockets of both the employees and the employers, meaning putting actual incentives in there where if you're a smoker, you can, you know, affect your premium, or if there are certain screenings done related to, you know, your body mass index or your overall, you know, blood pressure and cholesterol and how that can potentially affect your healthcare dollars, that usually takes a different approach on true healthcare claims coming down and people really paying attention to a wellness program. And people don't understand that that's actually legal, that you can have a 20% incentive towards your wellness program. And the legislation believed in it so much that they have increased that 20% incentive difference between, you know, what you can offer between the plans to 30% in 2014.
Yeah, you know, we had a show a couple of weeks ago about the legalities or where, how far can you go in terms of offering differentials in your health benefits between if somebody successfully goes through or participates in a wellness program and not, and we learned that you can, in fact, do that. And, you know, the interesting thing, I think, for the small to mid-sized company, we talked about how the fact that they don't think that they have many options available to them other than premium shopping. And the reality is that the statistics show that for every dollar that is spent on healthcare cost, a wellness program can save an employer, you know, a minimum of $2.30, but up to $10.10 for every dollar spent on a actually corporate wellness program. So the fact that these are showing to be effective even for the small to mid-sized company. Now, you may not be the Coca-Cola with, you know, 20,000 employees where you may get the $10 savings for every dollar you spend, but if you're still getting a $2 or $3 savings per every dollar you spend on a wellness program, you know, that seems
like a no-brainer.
Exactly. You know, why wouldn't you? And I think the issue here is education for these small and mid-sized employers that they don't know, well, number one, what's coming at them with this legislation, but number two, they don't even know the value that a wellness program can have for them financially.
Absolutely. But the one thing I do want to add to that is kind of back to my original, it really depends on what type of program you're implementing. Mm-hmm. You know, you really, in order to get those types of returns, you really have to get aggressive in your wellness program, and the management has to stand by it. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the key part of it, and really educate the employees and make sure that you're putting more so of an incentive-based wellness programs when you talk about those types of dollars, but absolutely. But regardless of any program that you're going to offer, you know, this is a society and cultural problem in our country, and, you know, something's got to be done. Healthcare dollars are continuing to rise, mm-hmm. and when you have high utilization, that equals high cost.
Yeah, and especially with this legislation doing a lot of cost shifting and adding some covered lives, pre-existing conditions, and other obligations on the small to mid-size employer, all employers, including the small to mid-size, you know, where they're getting squeezed on all ends, I think that a lot of them could really be resentful of this new legislation. But, you know, I think the wellness program of this new legislation and the incentives there is really the saving grace here for the small and mid-size employer that may actually push them into an environment that is better for them. You know, like these wellness programs are more than just a cost savings on the premiums and the healthcare costs. They actually can reduce absenteeism, have higher productivity, as well as reducing the use of the healthcare benefits and workers' comp, disability, and reduced injuries and increased morale and loyalty. And, you know, there's a statistic out there that says that the dollars that you save for lower absenteeism for every dollar spent on a wellness program is actually even higher than the healthcare costs. And so there's real value here in the wellness programs. So tell us a little bit about how the wellness incentives work in this new legislation that these employers should take advantage of.
Well, the actual wellness incentives that they've actually been around with the wellness rules for a while. What the legislation has actually implemented is that it has increased it in 2014 from 20% to 30%. And basically what that means is you have a differential between what you can offer an employee, let's say in a premium difference of 20% between the lowest and the highest based on your wellness results. Those wellness results can be a matter of, you know, tobacco screenings, or you could be on the honor system of who smokes versus who doesn't smoke. You can actually implement screenings, like I said, related to blood pressure, cholesterol, body mass index, triglycerides. There are various screenings that can actually be implemented, and one of the key things that an employer would need assistance from, which they would actually receive consultation from a broker or a wellness provider, is what are those wellness rules to make sure that we are in compliance with those. And like I said, the legislation in 2014 will increase that from 20% to 30%. But those incentive-based wellness programs have been around for a long time, and as you mentioned, Dawn, a lot of people didn't realize haven't realized that that's available. And there are two options. You could potentially self-administer these wellness programs, some of these incentives, just on premium, you know, differences, or you can actually hire a company to come in and administer it for you, which of course is more expensive, but you know, your return on investment in the long term, it is a long term commitment to see those results come in, because it does take a period of about 12 months for claims to actually die down from the implementation of a wellness program. So when you talked about absenteeism, there's also the claims piece, and then there's also the actual true premium dollars that you're spending that will you'll see decrease in result of that.
Well, we had talked with a woman a couple of shows ago who had implemented a wellness program for only a 150 employee site, and they not only saved money the first year, but they caught people who were at high risk who had not yet obtained any health care costs that were expensive. So the preventive was almost immeasurable. How much did they actually save from preventive health care costs and increases in premiums? And, you know, that was tough to say, but I think they had a 3% increase in premiums, which is, you know, almost like a 50% savings with the way that the premiums keep going up and up and up. But you know, the new legislation, it talks about a $2 million. Is that right? $2 million in grants, which I know you said is, you know, still a little bit fluffy and not hardly nailed down yet. But there's real incentives here for companies to actually get some of this paid for.
Yeah, and I do want to emphasize the wellness grants, from what I've read, is only available to companies under 100 employees at this point. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that will increase. But that's not to say there aren't incentives of many of the reasons we've talked about for companies to implement wellness programs over 100. But those specific grants, to my knowledge at this point, are only for companies under 100 employees on payroll. So, you know, and some of the other positive aspects of the law that you mentioned, for employees in 2014, there will be a guarantee issue for all employees. When we talked about for guarantee issue for children up to age 19, there will be guarantee issue not just for employees, but let's say a family's going out to buy an insurance policy. The full family will be guarantee issue by 2014.
What does that mean, guarantee issue?
For example, right now, people are surprised by this. Sometimes, if you know, it's part of one of the biggest issues of the healthcare reform was accessibility to healthcare. And for example, if you have an entrepreneur that's going out on their own, wanting to purchase health insurance for their family, but your spouse may be uninsurable, or you're uninsurable because you're potentially a diabetic, today's market, you cannot purchase. The policy is not guarantee issue. It means that you have to go through medical underwriting, and they can either apply a pre-existing condition on the policy as an individual or actually decline you. That doesn't occur if you move from one company to another. Portability applies in the corporate industry, but if you go out and try to buy an individual or family policy on your own, you can still be declined, and that will be no longer be effective in 2014. And it's currently not effective for children to age 19, although they are having open enrollment periods for those for those periods for children today. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so is there something that you think is the aspect of this legislation that impacts the small to mid-sized company the most, or is it other than the wellness programs and the incentives, or is this pretty much what you think shines out as being most impactful? Tell us what you think is going to really impact these sized companies the most.
Well, a couple of things. One other thing, a positive I want to mention, is the small business tax credit that will be available for companies with 25 employees and below on payroll. So that is something to look out for. There, you can go to the IRS.gov website. You can complete your data, and it will let you know immediately if you qualify for the small business tax credit. It will be a tax credit available for 2010. In 2011. So that's good news. Some of the pieces, and this is kind of behind the scenes, that could potentially affect on a negative aspect of it is the non-discrimination rules that apply. This can affect especially franchisees. You can no longer carve out management if it leans toward highly compensated employees, where a lot of times franchisees may carve out to management, you know, and they don't offer benefits to all their employees. That is effective now, currently, although the pay or play mandate's not until 2014. That the non-discrimination rule, if your plan is not grandfathered in, then you could potentially, you lose the status of being able to continue to carve out management or any type of carve out that leans towards highly compensated employees or discriminatory class.
That's interesting that you pointed out franchises. We did a show on franchises last week, and that would have been a good aspect to know and be able to communicate to all of our listeners who are interested in becoming a franchise, that that's something to think about as you're creating that new environment.
Right. One of the other pieces, there's the W-2 reporting that will apply for 2011. Any benefits that you pay or any thing that you pay towards benefits will have to be reported on your W-2, but that is not considered taxable income to the employee. That's something that a lot of people have been confused about. But probably one of the biggest pieces that's going to affect costs is, and this is one of the pieces that if anything was going to be repealed, this would be one of them. It's called modified community rating, which we do not currently have in Georgia. If anybody has bought insurance in New Jersey, which has a modified or has community rating currently, then you understand what this could do to costs. But basically, it no longer allows there's a 3-to-1 ratio of you can't have your highest cost 3 times more than your lowest cost of insurance. So right now, let's say you have a 25-year-old male at $100. Your 55-year-old male can't be more than 3 times, which it's very much like that today. We are rated based on our age, mostly here in Georgia, and health status and gender, et cetera. And so when that modified community rating comes out, you're going to see the gap's going to fill in more. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see a big chunk of probably the under the 50 market's going to increase a good bit. You may even see over 50 decrease somewhat to fill in that gap of the 3-to-1 ratio. So that one in Georgia specifically in 2014, and that's on a group and individual basis, regardless of that market. So that could be huge in Georgia.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your company and what services you provide to people.
We are an employee benefits broker and consultant. We work with corporations and individuals, working with them on their employee benefit planning, and that encompasses medical, disability, dental, life insurance, long-term care, wellness programs, workers' comp through our property and casualty division handles that piece of it as well. And we're a boutique firm, and we are a specialized firm that focuses in this area. And like you said, I've been handling employee benefits for 15 years. We work with small to mid-sized employers anywhere from 2 employees to 1,000 employees in these markets.
Fantastic. Well, how do we reach you?
You can contact us. I'll give you both our website and our phone number. And our website's www.corebenefitsga.com, corebenefitsga.com. And on our website, there's a contact page with all of our LinkedIn sites. And you can contact us also at 404-815-1566 and press 0.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Lisa, thank you for all that great information. I know people will want to reach out and figure out how they work this new legislation for themselves. I'd like to now turn to our next guest, Chad Bonner. He is co-founder of Usable Health, and his background is he is the founder and director of business development for this startup IT company, and it is a spinoff from our Georgia tech environment and is currently funded by the Georgia Research Alliance and the Advanced Technology Development Center here in Midtown. Mr. Bonner's background is in management and technology consulting for the healthcare industry. And prior to co-founding Usable Health, he spent 6 years in various leadership roles consulting CEOs and senior executives at hospitals and healthcare systems, Fortune 500 medical technology companies, international public health organizations, and U.S. state health departments. And these experiences for him have fueled his passion for improving health outcomes through innovative decision support solutions, both for individuals and their care providers. Chad, welcome to our show.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you.
Well, you all have, thanks to Georgia Tech's nice environment for technology and innovation here, you are one of our shining stars that have come out of that environment. And you all have, with your passion of healthcare and improving health outcomes, you have put that in place into a nice innovative product and service that can really help add to these wellness programs. Tell us a little bit about what you've been trying to do and what your product is doing.
Absolutely. So Usable Health, as you mentioned, is a spin-off of Georgia Tech Research. It's actually the research that has led to our software has been several years in development. We've done, my co-founder, Dr. Jiten Chhabra, has been researching this as a staff scientist at the university for several years now. And really what we've designed is a solution that gives your employees, if you're a company, or your health plan members, if you're a health insurer, access to real-time nutrition recommendations and support to help you manage whatever health condition you may have or risk factors you may have. And that really is portable, so it goes wherever you go. So if you are dining in your corporate cafeteria or shopping for yourself, in a grocery store or dining out with you and your family or coworkers, wherever you go, we have a web and mobile-based solution that really helps people best manage their health. So it's essentially, it's an evidence-based tool that helps people be healthier and make healthy behavior change.
It's great to see technology being imparted into the healthcare system and particularly into wellness programs with self-management and things like that. Historically, I have a disease management background for a number of years, and everything was we struggled to make it technology-based just simply because of the users weren't all technology folks and everything was in print and all of that. So in your opinion, is that where wellness programs are headed? Are there some innovative solutions that are easy and cost-effective to implement like that?
Absolutely. So we really believe that, as Lisa was saying, that that wellness programs can be very effective if you have the right incentives, but also if you give employees the tools they need to be healthy. And so, it's a lot to expect of your employees to get them to quit smoking or to lower their blood pressure, especially if you don't give them the tools they need to do that. And traditionally, health coaching, as you mentioned, disease management health coaching programs have really been centered around a one-to-one relationship between a health coach, often a nurse practitioner or a dietitian, and an individual employee. Those two individuals may meet once a month or may consult by telephone periodically to check in. But we really believe that solutions like ours, which are really designed to help people in their daily lives continuously, day in, day out, wherever they go, can be more effective at reaching that employee, that individual, and making a lasting health impact. And, so we believe that what's happening in the industry right now is that disease management programs are evolving, lots of employers are realizing that including a software platform like ours or a technological solution to help people manage their health, and maybe incorporating social networking or challenges around that, can actually be a great way to extend the impact that a traditional care provider might have with an individual employee.
Mm-hmm. As well as it could, be a nice add-on to one of those traditional medical management and disease management programs that, you can't sort of get around the fact that you do need medical advice and, medical intervention at some time. And that can help, those processes. But certainly from a real preventative side, this could be a great tool to use on a day-to-day basis to help them, prevent from getting into an actual medical situation. Where do you see these programs going? Is there a lot of time and effort being put into helping develop these tools that people can use on a day-to-day basis that are easy to use and not very expensive to implement from an employer standpoint?
Great question. So we think a lot about that, and we put a lot of time into that, obviously, at Usable Health. I think that, as I mentioned, the industry is definitely getting smarter, and employers, as they should be, are demanding more from traditional health coaching and companies and biometric screening companies, and really demanding more at lower cost. So we think it's inevitable that a lot of the, traditional care delivery that required having a large staff of nurses or dietitians to go on site to your workplace and meet with your employees individually. That's very expensive, very difficult to sustain, and very costly for employers. And so we think that absolutely that we're increasingly seeing companies developing wellness programs around web mobile-based solutions that can, give their employees the tools they need to self-manage their health. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to replace a health coach, but it means that health coach can be much more effective and you need many fewer health coaches to reach your population.
Do you have any data when you give the employee this kind of power where they kind of have to keep track themselves on a lot of these things? Do they stay compliant with this for any period of time?
We have a preliminary National Science Foundation funded outcomes. We were fortunate to, through our relationship with Georgia Tech, to do a couple of NSF funded studies on the campus among with students and faculty and employees of the university. And what we found is that, and this is a fairly short in duration, about 90 days in duration. But what we found is that absolutely we demonstrated high engagement, so that the folks who are using our software in a cafeteria setting and even at home and when dining out, were on average, we're using it, 81% of all the participants were using it on average at least once per day, which in our view, in over a 90-day period, that really speaks to the level of engagement we're able to reach. And when you think about comparing that to a traditional health coaching program, where the industry benchmark right now is about 50% of participating employees are accessing some form of health coaching or health education once in a 2-week period. Mm-hmm. That's just really a drastic, we think, improvement in engagement and really, an opportunity to change behavior and improve behavior. In terms of health outcomes, we also measured the extent to which folks who are using our software were actually becoming more compliant. We were tracking their choices that they were making over time, and we've so we actually were able to show that people were actually improving their dietary compliance with the protocol they were assigned to.
And that was a 90-day study, you said?
Yes.
With how many people?
We had, it was a randomized controlled study. We had almost 1,000 participants in total. And so the group that was receiving our software coaching was about 450 large.
Out of that 1,000, and so you saw a difference between those who were using your software and those who were not in
yes.
the controlled group.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we were really fortunate that in that study, lots of wellness companies struggle to have evidence-based research around what they're doing. And so I think that's been really helpful for us in getting the attention and the interest of local employers. We're currently planning a deployment with Norfolk Southern here in Atlanta, but we're also talking to smaller companies throughout the state who have many fewer employees who see this as being a potentially helpful solution mm-hmm. for their wellness program.
Given your background and you've been in the healthcare industry for a number of years, what do you see as one of the biggest challenges that these Georgia employers are facing right now with the healthcare cost and their employee wellness, et cetera?
Great question. So I don't want to speak for all of them, but the people that we've spoken to are facing the same challenges that employers across the country are facing. And Lisa, alluded to some of those. The costs are not going away. They're getting premiums are rising. The cost of healthcare delivery is rising. The population as a whole is getting less healthy. Some employers have recently tried to shift some of the costs, so they'll as premiums rise, as costs rise, they try to just to kind of maintain their profitability, are struggling to find ways of shifting those costs, and in some cases, charging higher premiums for their employees. But really, the bigger problem is not going away. So the bigger problem, which is, a less healthy population, higher costs of care delivery, is that trend is here to stay. And so we really believe that it's almost, even especially for the small employers, but for all employers, the question is not, how do I afford to cover healthcare costs for my employees? And that is a question, but the bigger question is, how can I afford not to have a wellness program that really does manages health and prevents, poor health?
Yeah, and especially with, they say that diet and, heart problems is, easily 50% of the preventable diseases that amount to 70 to 80% of the whole cost of healthcare costs and services. So it sounds like a program like this that helps better food choices can be really instrumental in any kind of disease management or care management or self-management, whatever you want to call a program, a wellness program. That can really be very effective given so much is related to diet and are easily controllable conditions.
Absolutely. So the CDC recently published data on this. Ken Thorpe, who's a professor of public health at Emory University here in Atlanta, published a report for the National Business Group on Health, focusing on the actual dollars can be attributed to poor nutrition and to obesity and obesity-related illnesses and for employers. And as you said, it's staggering. It's he was saying that the 15 costliest conditions in America to treat are all driven by obesity and obesity-related conditions like diabetes, mm-hmm. Hypertension. So this is really obesity and diabetes and related heart diseases are really what's driving costs in our country right now. And they are, difficult conditions to manage, but if you can improve diet and you can really make a big difference in those, mm-hmm. in that trend.
So how can a small to mid-sized employer take advantage of something like this? Does it have to be incorporated into a larger wellness program, or can it be a standalone? Or how do people take advantage of something like this?
Great question. So we work with all kinds of, we're open to working with all kinds of employers. Some of them, the larger companies like Norfolk Southern have an existing wellness program. They have some health education initiatives, and they really see this as being a component of that. For some smaller companies, they may not currently have a wellness program and may be looking to do something that's, again, cost-effective, is not too costly to implement and to get started, doesn't require, a large company to come in with a huge staff of nurses to kind of do on-site screenings, but can actually make an impact starting now at a much more reasonable cost. And so I think the answer is all kinds of employers can get involved. Because our platform is mobile and can be accessed anywhere, it doesn't require that an employer have a cafeteria. We really are designed to be that solution, that toolkit to help your employees wherever they may be going to manage their unique health risks through better diet and nutrition.
Mm-hmm. So you can find this incorporated into a larger wellness program, maybe with some things that Lisa is doing with her benefits packages. As well as just an employer can simply purchase the service and the product to give to their employees just as a one-off aspect of a wellness program. And, is this a program that is, costly for an employer? Is it a monthly or is it a one-time, fee? Or how would this work for a small to mid-sized company of about 150, 200 employees?
Yeah, great question. So we absolutely are lower cost than a lot of the programs that are out there. If you look at kind of the traditional model with nurse coaching when they come on site and do consultations with employees, that can easily run $25 per employee per month. And we are, you know, we are a very small percentage of that because we, again, because we're a software-based platform, we have one dietitian who works with us. My co-founder is a physician, so they really are a medical team. Mm-hmm. And the software, it scales very easily, so it can reach all of your employees, regardless of where they are. And so we offer our plans on average for about $2 per participating employee per month. But certainly that can be even can go down even more if we can for the companies that commit to longer mm-hmm. Engagements or can work with us on maybe have more employees.
Okay, great. Well, I'd like to now open it up to any other member of the group here. Does anybody have any questions for Chad and what they're doing with at Usable Health for some of the innovative software-based solutions? Nope. Okay, great. Well, Chad, tell us what's next for Usable Health. Where are you taking this, and how can we reach you if our employers or health benefits or other wellness programs might be interested in incorporating your solution?
Thank you. So we actually, it's been a very busy time for us. We were just recently last week profiled on CNN. So I encourage anyone who's interested in learning more to visit our website or CNN to watch the segment. I can't remember the name of the host. I think his name is Ari. The show is called The Big Eye, The Big Idea. And we so please check that out. But to get in direct contact with us, you can visit our website at www.usablehealth.com. That's all one word, USABLE, health. You can also reach us. We're based here in Midtown, just on the campus of the Advanced Technology Development Center in Technology Square. And please feel free to shoot me an email at chad@usablehealth.com with more questions.
Wonderful. Well, that's a very interesting to learn how we can start using some technology and some software into these self-management programs. I'd now like to turn to our next guest, Deborah Ault. She is a.k.a. Nurse Deb, as she likes to be called or has been known. She's a registered nurse and has been for about 20 years, and she has bedside experience in both ER and ICU. She is president of Ault International Medical Management, also referred to as AIM, and she co-founded that company over 8 years ago in response to her dissatisfaction with the insurance industry's and corporate America's unwillingness to do what needed to be done. Last year, the company had 200% growth, and the year prior to that, it had 158% growth. The company practices a model of medical management that she created and which she is in the process of patenting called P3CM, which stands for Patient-Centric Comprehensive Care Management. So, Deb, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you could be here. You've heard a little bit about the conversation on the new legislation and wellness programs, and I'd like to now learn a little bit more from you. You have a very comprehensive program, and tell us what you've been seeing in the medical management and wellness program areas that you see as being either problems or solutions that you all are trying to fix.
Well, I mean, the problems are too numerous to list, and I think a lot of them probably led to some of the legislation that we're seeing. I think that as an industry, both a healthcare industry and an insurance industry, we've just been at an impasse with one another for so long, and the things that we've tried in the past have had such unintended consequences that we've really kind of worked ourselves into this quandary of what do we do next? And one of the biggest issues that I have with a lot of what's going on within the medical management industry is the loss of that human component in healthcare. It seems like, I don't know if you've been a patient lately, but you go to a healthcare provider and you become just a number or just a diagnosis or just another person moving through the system. And every insurance company is so different and has such different rules and such different processes that as a healthcare provider, it's difficult to keep track of who allows what and, you know, can we send them for this test or do we have to do plain film x-rays before we can jump to the MRI? What do we do? And as patients, we're being asked more and more and more to become consumers of our health benefits and to view our health care utilization as a purchase, but it's not as simple as just flipping to some Consumer Reports type of digest and saying, you know, washing machines, microwaves, cardiologists. There's a good one. Let's find that one. So we've made it very difficult for patients to navigate the system. And unless they are healthcare individuals themselves, we've made it very difficult for them to know what best-in-class healthcare looks like, feels like, smells like, what their insurance company will cover, what they won't cover, how much things are going to cost. We've just really put ourselves into a position where we don't know what we don't know, and we don't know how to ask for what we need. So the thing that our company has really founded to do is to kind of take that individual patient by the hand and walk them through the healthcare process, walk them through the health insurance maze, and help them get to an optimum state of health, whether they're having a really serious, acute, catastrophic kind of illness, a simple, normal pregnancy, or they're trying to lose weight, or they're trying to stop smoking. Help them to navigate through that system. And the other part is helping them to know about the community resources that are out there that they can tap into that may not even involve their health insurance at all. A lot of people don't even know where to begin, and there's a wealth of information and knowledge out there, and helping them sort through it's really important.
You know, those are all excellent, excellent points, and I think all of us as consumers, we have certainly felt every bit of what you have just said and have been very frustrated. And it seems like there is a lack of connection between the various participants, between the healthcare providers, the insurance companies, and the patients. And everybody's trying to kind of throw the stuff over the wall and say it's your fault. I think that, as we've talked before, you know, especially when you're talking about the relatively unsophisticated employer of the small and mid-market size. You know, they hear these buzzwords, like you call them, wellness and disease management, and they think that those are really programs designed for the larger companies of 1,000 employees or more. What's your perspective on that?
Well, you know, we have many, many current clients that are in that small to mid-sized market. Actually, that's about all that our company services. You get to 5,000 employee lives and bigger, and that's a huge client to us. The biggest quandary that most employers that come to us have is, okay, I'm sponsoring this health plan, and we work predominantly with self-funded health plans. So they've already gone through all of the typical purchasing kinds of decisions, and they've honed their plan design, and they've determined what their portion versus the employee's portion is going to be. And their question becomes, okay, I want to do all these wonderful things. I want to do health fairs. I want to do flu shot clinics. I want to do walking programs. But how do I pay for that? How can I afford to do that? I can't, you know, invest any more in this. It's already one of my highest expenses within the company. And we say, you know, start out with the basic block and tackle, because what we're finding is that the people that are sick right now, today, in your population are probably expending healthcare dollars at a higher rate than what they really would be if they had the information, the resources, the support, the guidance through these systems. And if you kind of stick to what we call the basic block and tackle, and you look at true utilization management, admits per thousand, average length of stay, getting catastrophically ill members the care they need, the right care at the right time in the right place, that you can begin to control your overall spend enough that you can more than pay for some of these wellness programs. The other issue that we have employers bring up is, you know, well, my employees don't become tenured. They're not here 10, 15, 20 years. I'd love to do prevention and wellness, but am I just making them healthy for the next employer on their list? Mm-hmm. And so employers really need to get to understand their own organization, where their health care dollars are going. And the other quandary that many of our clients say is, you know, we have vendors come in all the time and they tell us we need asthma, diabetes, hypertension, COPD, and CHF disease management programs. And those decisions are made based on national averages. Well, if you're a 200 employee life group, the chances that you fall into the national averages are very slim. So unless you've got somebody who's really knowing your population and the individuals that make up your medical spend, it's very difficult to know where to make an investment that you're going to get return on investment from. That's because if you've got 40 diabetics and all of them are already getting best-in-class care and they're already well-managed and they're already doing everything that they should be doing to control their diabetes, putting a disease management program to address diabetes in place is really going to be a waste of your resources and that employee's time and energy.
That's a very, very good point. So for companies who are at that 150 to, 400 employee life, what do you recommend for them? Because clearly they don't have the resources of the 1,000-plus employees to put in, from beginning to end program. But like you say, you want to be very pointed, very focused, and very effective. So, can a program be effective for a company of that size? And how do they go about it?
Absolutely. It can be very effective, but it has to be administered differently. And by that, I mean you really need to partner with a provider, a company like ours, that is going to focus on your population, even though you're not the biggest fish in the pond, so to speak. And, you've really got to engage the members of your population and give them a confidential, independent source that they can work with, that they can tap into, that they can feel comfortable with. And you've really got to look at this. One of the earlier experts mentioned this being a long-term commitment. You've got to look at this as a stepwise game plan. Step one, we're going to take this initiative and we're going to maximize the potential. And once we've generated some savings, then we're going to invest in the next piece, and then we're going to maximize the potential that we can get from that, and then we're going to invest in the next piece. And instead of trying to do everything all at once and hoping that, some of the spaghetti you're throwing at the wall will stick, really partner with a vendor that will get to know you. Things like claims data mining, predictive risk modeling, those are available. It's just that they're not widely available. So you've really got to do some due diligence, partner with good individual vendors, and think about carving up some of these pieces and looking for niche boutique vendors that can really spend some time and energy focusing on your population.
Yeah, and that's a good point, that while it may take you 12 to 18 months to see savings from actual health claims, in the interim, however, though, you may actually, as an employer, receive the benefit of reduced absenteeism and improved productivity and reduced injuries, so that you have to, expand your focus on what you're looking at as an ROI. Is that right?
Absolutely. Everybody knows that the CFO cares about the check that he's writing at the end of the day, but there are some almost intangible concepts. In this market size, key talent drain, losing someone who is integral to your organization to a heart attack or to a stroke or to cancer, and having their ability to function every day, all day long, and put in those 10 and 12 and 14-hour days that we see them putting in, having them not be able to do that can be really devastating to an organization. So when those things occur, you've got to make sure that you have resources at their disposal that are almost concierge-like, that they're going to navigate the systems both from a health and an insurance perspective with that individual. I mean, how many times have you called the doctor's office and said, oh, my God, I need to be seen right now, and they say our next appointment's in 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have someone to help employees through that kind of issue to get them as healthy as possible, as quickly as possible. And when you do some of those things on the acute side, when you've got a key person in your organization that navigates the system smoothly and effectively, they automatically become, number one, an internal champion. Because, you talk about wellness programs and kind of steering the battleship and getting people to think about health and wellness and those kinds of things. There's nothing better than someone within your own organization, especially organizations of this size, where a key person in the organization says, this is what I went through, and you don't want to do it. Here's how you can avoid it.
What would you say to employers in that small to mid-size range where we've done a number of shows lately about how these companies are finding it difficult to get lines of credit and other funding because of the way that the financial markets are right now? So a lot of these companies have been hunkering down and trying to stay in business and trying to grow without the benefit of a lot of the traditional lines of credit and financing that's been available to them in the past. And so any kind of outside expense that unless it has an immediate ROI to them, they just can't even think about that. What do you say to a company that feels stressed, that feels hunkered down about the value and investment of a wellness program right now?
Well, I think there are lots. Everybody's heard, even just in this segment so far, all of the reasons that you want to do this. And being a business owner myself, I understand that taking one more dime out of the bottom line can be very difficult. Most health plans already have many of these components built into their pricing structure. The difference is that the services that you're getting are of a different intensity. So often there are opportunities to carve those expenses out of your existing programs and place them with an independent boutique concierge type service and not incur much, if any, additional costs simply by carving that out and placing it with an independent vendor who's much more focused and reporting directly to you, as opposed to doing it through the typical mechanism. So there certainly are opportunities within what you already have. Hopefully the government will come forward with grants for wellness in the future, but if they don't, most groups will find that there is enough money if they take a stepwise approach to better managing those acute illnesses and injuries right now, that they'll be more than able to fund the things that they want to do from the claims dollars that they save.
That's a really excellent point, that they can carve out of their existing indemnity plan or you mentioned that most who you work with right now are self-funded, and yet you're still working with the small to mid-market sized companies. We're actually going to be talking about how these small to mid-sized companies can self-insure their health plans, because that has historically been unreachable in their minds for them. But they can actually do these carve-outs. So, it sounds like they really need to utilize the expert of a health benefits broker who can really help them look at all of these options, that what might be the best for them, so that they can really do something that makes sense for them and they're not just looking for the lowest premium.
Absolutely. And not only a good benefits broker, but a benefits broker that's willing to look at all options. It's not unusual to see benefit brokers that rule out boutique or concierge services simply because it's not all in one package. Mm-hmm. So from an administrative standpoint, I think that the work and energy that goes into setting up a panel of specialists is, certainly somewhat labor intensive in the beginning, but if you limit yourself to a benefits broker who's only going to look at solutions that are already prepackaged, you may be doing yourself a huge disservice and eliminating some of the things that really could have maximum impact for your health plan.
What have you experienced is some of the most important aspects of an employer, one of your clients, that makes it successful or not successful?
I think, obviously, communication is key. Letting your employees know why healthcare costs what it does, why the premiums are what the premiums are, talking to them about shared risk, about how, hey, I'm willing to pay for your cancer this year. Will you be willing to pay for mine next year? Getting that message out there that we're all in this together, and building a team within the organization, which can be difficult to do if you have multiple locations, especially if you're a small group with multiple locations. So I think that key component is typically communication and ongoing communication, keeping out in front of your members, here's what our claims are this month, here are the things that we're doing to help with these initiatives. You know, someone earlier mentioned, do you use the carrot or the stick approach? I kind of like the Carnegie philosophy of appealing to the nobler motive. In reality, nobody wants to be sick. Mm-hmm. They don't often realize that their lifestyle and behavior choices are going to lead to the consequence of being sick. We as Americans kind of think, oh, it'll never happen to me, or, you know, that's so far off in the future that it won't really matter. And then all of a sudden, guess what? Here it is. So kind of beginning to get people to think about those things one-on-one, and I love some of the technology solutions that are coming out. We're deploying many of them within our organization. But nothing really replaces that one-on-one interaction between a dedicated professional registered nurse talking with the member, whether that's telephonically, whether it's face-to-face, especially if you're doing it telephonically. Those services don't have to be exorbitantly expensive. And the key to getting the culture in your organization changed is getting those individuals to pick up the phone and talk to that nurse, either by calling in or by accepting a call that comes to them from the nurse. Mm-hmm. That's really the key component.
And I know we have a success story here on the phone with us about your services. But before we get to him, tell us a little bit about your program. How does it work, and what advantages does it provide for the employer?
Sure. Well, we are an independent major medical health plan component. We work with self-funded health plans. We do utilize a unique non-siloed approach called Patient-Centric Comprehensive Care Management, or PC3M for short. And essentially what we do is we fully integrate utilization management, case management, disease management, wellness management. We do claims data mining. We do predictive risk modeling. We do health risk assessments, worksite wellness, population health initiatives, a wide variety of things that we kind of put together to make a total health management program. And one of the things that's unique about our organization is that customization that's available for each client, regardless of their size, and developing collaboratively with the client a game plan that's going to maximize their return on investment. So the things that our clients experience, obviously claims cost reduction is a very important component. At a minimum, mitigating trend and trying to level off those expenses, but many of our clients experience an actual decrease in their overall claims costs. They have increases in presenteeism, increases in productivity, increased morale, retention changes. A lot of employers right now are not able to go out and buy the key talent that they need by putting the best salary offer on the table. And we know that the Google generation, for example, isn't looking just at salary. They're looking at what are the other perks. So having this kind of concierge health service available to those individuals can really be helpful in retaining talent that they already have in-house and recruiting additional talent that they're wanting to bring on. So as we see some of the things changing with healthcare legislation, we know that every company is going to start offering expanded coverage for children up to age 26. That's not going to be a perk that you can put on the table. You're going to have to come up with other creative solutions. And this kind of concierge service of putting a nurse at the patient's disposal around the clock who can help them navigate both the health and the insurance systems really can become key in that endeavor.
That's wonderful. It's great that you offer the entire scope, preventive, you know, during healthcare cost maintenance and management, as well as, you know, aftercare. So you sort of are with them from A to Z.
Absolutely.
Well, great. Does anybody have any questions for Deb about her program? No. Yeah, go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, Deb.
Hello.
You mentioned that you work with self-funded. Have you worked with any fully insured with your program?
We do not currently. While we certainly would, in a fully insured environment, a lot of the acute care interventions that you would do from a utilization management standpoint are not an option. So the incentive is different in a fully insured program. We do some unique overlay services where we are not doing the pre-certification, but they tend to have a lower return on investment. And they require much more intensive communication campaigns, much higher level of corporate support internally to make them successful.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Deb, how do we reach your company and you and find out more about how AIM might be able to assist our local companies here?
Well, there are several ways. Obviously, our website, www.aim-m.com. You certainly can also call us. Our toll-free number is 866-845-8854. If you want to reach me personally, you're welcome to give me a call at 419-689-1109. You can email to dault@aim-m.com. Send up smoke signals, send a carrier pigeon, whatever it takes, we're here to help.
Wonderful. Well, we love hearing about these kinds of programs that can really help both the employee and the employer.
I appreciate you having me.
So now I'd like to turn to one of your success stories. Jeff Donahue is the Vice President and Controller of Delta Life Fire and Casualty Insurance Company here in Atlanta. And Jeff, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about, let's talk about before you used AIM's services. What was going on in your company and what made you think about the option of using a program like AIM?
Well, Delta was pretty much like everyone that you've been talking about, all the issues and problems. We've got a aging workforce. We've got a lot of people that have... they're suffering from diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and our costs were just dramatically increasing each year, and we would have absolutely no information on what was going on, why this was, what were the type of illnesses. We felt helpless to take any action, so we decided to move into a self-funded plan, and we instituted as one of the processes in this, we set up our relationship with AIM to kind of foremost to give I thought to give the employee an advocate, which I thought was the most important thing. It gave them a contact that someone they could talk to would. And they could tell them what's going on, and it was really a big help for the employee. They weren't out there by themselves. And on our side, it gave us an idea of what was going on in the workforce. And we set up one of the very first things I think we did. We did that a health questionnaire, and you get a lot of pushback from the employees. But finally, we got most of the workforce to respond to AIM on what their specific issues were with their health. And it kind of gave us an idea of what was going on. And then we kind of went from there to try to set up, different programs.
That's a very good point that you mentioned. Because of HIPAA, and the patient privacy rules, you as the employer...
Are you still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So that, you as the employer, although you're seeing these dramatic increases in costs year over year, it was very frustrating, I think, to most employers, the way you were describing, in that you had no visibility as to what was going on because of the HIPAA privacy rules. You're not allowed to know details about your health. The health of your employees.
That's right.
Yeah. So only in a way that you could aggregate information, which your health insurance company is probably not going to be so inclined to provide you, especially when you're on a fully insured indemnity plan and you've got 200 lives or something like that in your employee base. So this was really the only way for you to determine what kind of program you really needed for your workforce.
That's right. And used it as a, it was a base for us to get started. And, AIM, what they do is they reach out to the employee and provide, different programs. And we have we've got 200 employees scattered over the state of Georgia in 10 different district offices. And, we've got a lot of people that are over age 50. We've got a lot of people in their early 60s. These are a sales force. They're on the road a lot. They're not thinking about taking care of themselves. They're not spending a lot of time taking care of themselves. And through mail outs and actually direct contact, AIM actually reaches out to the employee and calls them up and keeps calling them until they get a response. And if they don't get a response, they call us. And we get in touch with the employee and make sure they get back with AIM. And, you know, if it's a medication issue, AIM will work with them on, you know, what they should be asking the doctor, what are the different options with medication. If they're going into a hospital stay, they'll give the employee an idea of what to expect, how long they're going to be in there, you know, what are the options they should be speaking to their doctor about. And on our side, it also gives us, lets us know, you know, we're going to, and we've got someone in the hospital, mm-hmm. You know, and how long they're going to be there. And it helps and keeps a line of communication with the employees so they don't feel like they're all alone.
You know, for most people out there, most employers out there of your similar size of 200 employees, I would venture to say that the vast majority of them would think that they were too small to really benefit from a program like this or to be able to afford a program like this. So tell us what your experience has been in terms of the impact, the success, and the return on what you've put into this and cost-wise.
Well, our overall costs are so large that what we spend on this is a small part. I mean, our problem is, you know, people incurring major medical expenses through hospitalization or cancer treatment. So the cost, I mean, we got a pretty quick benefit. Gave the employee a benefit because there was also a nurse on call option that, you know, they have a round the clock number to call. You know, the cost of this was not, it was kind of a no-brainer for us. It's not, this certainly isn't driving up our costs, it's helping to reduce it. And if we can keep them out of the hospital, you know, we're going to see, that's our plan, and I think Deb will tell you, one of our goals is to catch the problem areas early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy that says he's been to the doctor and he was prescribed medication, but he's not taking it. Well, they work with him to get him, you know, get him back on his medication program. And by doing that, if we keep him out of the hospital, that's where we see our biggest benefit. And also, we get our people back to work, which is a big plus for us.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got a mixture. We've got a lot of people that have been here forever. You know, some people have been here 20 years. And we've got young people that haven't been here very long and won't stay that long. So we've got a mixture of people. And the program gives them a chance to choose between, you know, what do I want out of this? I want a nurse on call if I have a small child. And I have a nurse on call. I have someone I can call. I might not have to go to the doctor, or I might be able to find out if I need to go to the doctor, or if I've got an older employee that's, you know, realizes that they need to get, you know, help with, you know, obesity is a big problem in our group. We see that in all the different censuses that we do, and getting people on a diet and sticking to a diet, you know, they don't want to do it, and they don't like the, you know, someone on them about it, but, you know, once they realize that it's only going to help them in the long run, that they get with the program.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while, but eventually they'll start to cooperate.
That's really encouraging to hear that a company of your size of only 200, you know, all those companies out there are experiencing, I think, what you have, which is these dramatic increases in costs and just the premiums year over year over year. And, you know, something has got to change. You got to stick your foot in the sand and say, I'm going to now start to do something different, or this is going to continue in this way. And it's really encouraging to hear that a company of your size has gained such great benefit from a program like this that most people think would be clearly outside of their reach at that size.
Yeah, this was kind of a team effort. Our the broker that we worked with that kind of set us up, he put us in contact with AIM, and we weren't sure about it, but we decided to go ahead with it, and it's been a big help. We don't have too many options, and this is gives us a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Something to try to show some progress and try to make a difference. And overall, it's been very helpful.
Great, great. Well, I'd like to ask any of our other panelists, does anybody have a question of Jeff? Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about your company and give you an opportunity to tell our listeners about what you do and what you can provide to the small and mid-sized company out there.
Well, Delta Life is a life insurance company operating here in Georgia. We've been operating in Georgia since 1958, and we service all markets in the state of Georgia out of our district offices, and our home office number here is 404-231-2111, and we're out on the web at delta-life.com.
Wonderful. Well, I really appreciate you joining us this morning to give us a real example of the success of the small to mid-sized company having this kind of benefit from a wellness program, because I know a lot of listeners out there would not think that this would be something that they could do. So I'd like to thank all of our guests for joining us today. And as just a summary, it sounds like with this new legislation particularly, employers are moving or being forced to move to a more active participant role in their employees' health care, not just a payer or as a source of funding for the insurance, but actually getting involved on some level to really participate in this. And that the promoting of the wellness programs is a very, very key component that's not only being promoted and encouraged by legislation, but as we're hearing now, can really benefit the employer as well as the employee. And there's all kinds of ways that you can implement these that will have a financial success impact as well as a health impact. So I'd like to thank you all again. And Lee, why don't you tell us again who our sponsor was today?
Sure. Palladium CLO brings to your business in-depth knowledge of your industry, of the players in your industry, their businesses, and how the various legal and business issues affect your industry and your business. Palladium sees the possibilities, not just the liabilities. You can find out more information at www.palladiumclos.com.
Great. Well, thank you to our listeners for joining us. And next week, as we heard from our listener or our panel today, that the opportunity to self-fund for your health benefits to the employer that's the small to mid-size is actually very doable. And we're going to talk about that next week. So thank you again for joining us. And stay tuned till next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. on Corporate Conversations.